Morning, everyone. Today's daf from Bava Metzia, Zayin Gimel. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lezech Nishmas Libi Gavriel Bashmuel. We're doing better, getting back to where we need to be. We are starting today in Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. We're at the top of the Amud. We're starting with the words Tanur Rabbanan. Obviously, in the fifth paragraph of Bava Metzia, so we're talking about lending with interest. It's prohibited. I think we've got that established at this point in time now. We're winding down. We're getting to the end of the fifth paragraph. I told you it was a two-week. It's a two-week process, and as long as I somewhat keep up to speed, so then I'll keep my promise. So the Tanur Rabbanan, we start with the top. Yisrael shalav amazmin anachri beribis v'zakvan alav b'malve. So the story starts off with a Jew borrowing money from a non-Jew, and he does so with interest, which, again, as we pointed out, that's fine. The non-Jew is totally entitled to charge interest from a Jew, and then zikvan alav b'malve. And then what they did is as follows. Interest is accruing, and the Jew says to the non-Jew, can we make it stop? can we make the interest stop? So the non-Jew says, you know what, fine, no problem at all. Let's see where we are right now. And so they tallied up how much the principal is, how much the interest is, and they came to they arrived at the number, and then what the non-Jew did is he made up a new loan document. This new loan document now is going to basically take the P&I, it's going to take the principal and the interest, and he's going to make a new loan out of it. But this new loan is not going to be an interest-bearing loan, it's just going to be a summary of the interest and principal up until this point in time, but that's it though. In other words, the first wheel is stopping, we're getting off over here. Okay, good. So, and by right, I mean, the non-Jew didn't have to do this, but okay, he did it. And then his gayer. And then he converts now becoming a Jew. So now he is the same note holder, but with one notable difference. Prior to the, right, he used to be not Jewish, now he's Jewish. So, imkovshin is gayer zikvan alavam b'milva. So, if, let's say, the conversion of the loan from P&I to just a one flat loan happened before he converted. So govas a kamer, govas a ribis. So then he's in good shape. Then he's allowed to use this new loan document as a vehicle of collecting everything, because everything now is just a loan. However, in la'achrishin, this guy is zikvan alav b'milvah. But let's say he converted the loan after he converted, right? His conversion came before the loan conversion. So that means now that we're going to have to separate and segregate the principal and the interest. The principal, he can collect. The interest, he can no longer collect. Okay. Govetz a kenvein, govetz a ribis. V'chein. And we're going to do the same thing now in the other direction. Nachrish lav ameos me Yisrael beribis. So let's say the non-Jew is the borrower. The Jew is the lender. The Jew lends money with interest, which again is legitimate. And zikvan lav b'milvah. And again, the non-Jew asks the Jew, can you do me a favor? We have principal, we have interest, it's accruing. Can we basically, can we take the P&I, can we add them together, can we create a new loan, summarizing the principal and interest, and make it stop? Meaning, and this new loan will be how much I owe you flatly, period. So if it is Gayer, and then he converts, so again, the story is going to be the same basic conclusion, is that if the conversion of the loan came before the conversion of the non-Jew, so then he'll be able to collect Karen and Ribbis, who can collect principal and interest. However, however, if let's say the conversion of the loan came after the conversion of the convert, of the non-Jew, so then you can collect the principal, but you cannot collect the interest. Now, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nachrish Lava Mas Mishal Beribis Bin Kachu Bin Kachu Govitz Karen VeGovitz Beribis. On this last point, Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you're going to be able to collect. In other words, we're on the latter case of the Braisa, where the Jew is a lender and the non-Jew is a borrower. Under both circumstances, says Rav Yossi, the Jew will be able to collect principal and interest, whether it was rolled into a new loan, or even if it was not rolled into a new loan, you could collect principal and interest. So a couple of points the Gemara makes. One, So point number one is Allah falls like Rav Yossi. Okay? Now, Amarava, my time to Rav Yossi. Now we need an explanation, because if you think about it, Rav Yossi's position does not make sense. Meaning, once the non-Jew converts to becoming a Jew, so then he is given all the privileges of being a Jew. Notably, he doesn't pay interest to another Jew. So if the loan, if the old loan was not rolled over into a new loan, and the old loan is still a composite of principal and interest, why would the non-Jew have to pay both the principal and the interest? He's no longer a non-Jew. He converted. He should be able to not have to pay the interest. And the Gemara now quoting Rava, explaining Rav Yossi, says that's exactly our concern. We're always worried about the a non-Jew converting for ulterior motives, for marriages, for money, and over here there's going to be a real financial benefit for conversion. Meaning, if he's got a loan and there's principal and there's interest, and all I need to do is just convert, and there's not going to be any interest, so now we're worried about an ulterior motive. So to which Rav Yossi says, okay, so this will be basically the testing ground to see whether or not his motives are sincere or ulterior. If he has sincere motivation, so fine, so then he'll pay the principal and interest, and therefore there was no monetary gain for his conversion, and obviously he was sincere. If he gets a relaxation and he doesn't have to pay the interest, so then we're worried about the ulterior motive.
Why can't you say what we learned previously, if there's a hand in a non-Jew?
No, that's specific to the halachas of Bechor. That's not a global concept. That's just specific to the halachas of Bechor. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes another brayso, Shtar Shekasubo Ribis, Konsen Oso Venego Velosi Kevin Velosi Ribis Divrei Meir. Okay, a contract between Jew and Jew, a loan document that has principal and interest, according to Rav Meir, the entire loan document becomes disqualified. Okay, Rav Meir, who is, generally speaking, we follow the gzeiras of Rav Meir throughout Ch'as, this being a notable exception, but Rav Meir basically, as the Gemara is going to articulate in just a second, is of the opinion that once you are a lender lending money to another Jew with interest, so then the penalty will be, of course you can't collect the interest, that is something which is prohibited by the Torah. But more than that, according to Rav Meir, the penalty is going to include also principal as well. You cannot collect principal using such a loan document. Now, this loan document totally... Is it totally torn up? Is it totally ripped up? According to Rav Meir, seemingly, although that is in of itself another larger discussion. But anyway, that sheet is Rav Meir. And the Chachamim say no. On the loan amount that's owed to you so that you can collect using the document. On the Ribbis, so that's the only part that you can't collect because that's Asur Min HaTorah. Now, B'makim Eflugi, and the Gemara now explains very simply what is at the core of the debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. The Gemara says, Rav Meir, Savar, Kansin, and Heter, Mishum, Misura. For Rabban and Savar, Lo, Kansin, and Heter, Mishum, Misura. The difference, very simple, is that according to Rav Meir, once you lent money with interest, so the Chachamim penalized you, and therefore you can no longer use this loan document to collect neither the interest nor the principal as well. It's a kenas.
If you were familiar about that, you wouldn't be able to collect either?
The significance of disqualifying the document is that now you can't collect from a shubadim, right?
But there's a mitzvah about that. So what? You still can collect.
You could still collect, but in other words, but it doesn't.
There's no shibud.
There's no shibud. That's correct. So the Gemara says so. Kansin etzer mishum isura. Okay, so that's at the and according to the Chachamim, no kenas is made, and that means then that okay, you shouldn't have charged the interest. You're not going to be able to collect the interest, but the penalty is not going to go so far as to disqualify the document vis-a-vis the principal. You still are going to be a note holder vis-a-vis the principal.
It's also to borrow the interest.
Correct.
So why are we penalizing the lender, not the borrower?
It really cuts into the question which I ducked, which is what kind of penalty are we talking about according to Rav Meir? Meaning, if the penalty is just on the actual paper itself, so that means that you're still obligated. Meaning, you're still going to be collecting your principal. It's just that you no longer have a note supporting that, which means that there's no shibud. Okay. If we're going to go one step further, which again, the Gemara doesn't spell this out, but it's discussed in the Rishonim. If we're going to go one step further and we're going to say that you're no longer able to collect anything, so then I'm with you. Then it's harder to understand how we're going to be penalizing both the lender and the borrower to the extent where the lender can't collect anything. Okay, but... All right, so where do we stand right now? Basically, we're talking about documents that were drawn up that should not have been drawn up, and whether or not you can collect with it. Rav Meir says you can't, and the Chachamim say you can. That's vis-a-vis interest. Now we're going to be discussing other loan documents that you shouldn't have drawn up. So, predated documents. Okay, I know for us it's more, you know, we talk more about in terms of checks, but predated documents, good or no good? And we're talking about loan documents. Predated loan documents, no good. Not only no good, psulim. In other words, it's disqualified. And Masha Enkin, if it's Mucharim, if it's post-dated, so then that's okay. So then it would be kosher. What's at the root over here between what's the difference between a pre-dated and a post-dated? It's very simple. Because we know that every time you are a note holder, so that means that you're going to have a lien against the borrower's property. A lien dating to what? To the origination of the loan. Once it's predated, so now you're creating days on the calendar which are fictitious days, meaning a predated document now will allow the note holder to collect, exercising a lien against properties that were sold, which, truth be told, were not really encumbered. And so now, if you predate a document, that may give the lender a right to collect a property that, quite frankly, he has no right to collect. Therefore, according to this Mishnah in Shvius, the Chachamim disqualify the predated document. Mashenkin, as opposed to a post-dated document, it's not so bad. Meaning all that means now is that the lender is going to have to lose some days in which he cannot exercise a lien. But in other words, but he's not going to be grabbing away encumbered properties that are illegally encumbered. In other words, it just simply means that the date of the document came after the origination of the loan. That's fine. So, when I say it's fine, by the way, it's still not honest, it's not truthful if you're not dating the document at the time of the loan, but in other words, no one's going to lose in such a scenario. Or to put it more frankly, the lender may lose, because the lender will simply have lost those days in which he already lent the money, but he has no lien against those days between the origination of the loan and the actual date of the document, if it's post-dated. But again, we're talking now about predated. We're focusing on predated documents. So, my psalm, Nehidlo Gavam Mizman Rishon, Nigvam Mizman Sheni. To which the Gemara says, look, a predated document. I understand that for the lender to exercise a lien against the predated document from the time of the date to the actual time of the loan, that you can't do. I get it. But let the lender at least be able to collect using this note based on the real date of the loan. Now, the real date of the loan, how is it going to be ascertained? I guess we'll get the witnesses to come forward. But at least let him do that. So, Am Rabbi Shimon Malakish B'Machlokish Nuiv Rameri. So, Reish Lakish says, I think that the author of the Mishnah Shvius coordinates perfectly with the opinion of Rameir vis-a-vis our discussion about interest-bearing loan. Remember, according to Rameir, interest-bearing loans are disqualified. Both interest and principal. So what now, Rav Yochanan, what Reish Lakish is suggesting is that in this Mishnah Shvius, even though it's an anonymous Mishnah, we're going to put it on the side of Rav Meir. Because now we're saying that a predated document is fundamentally flawed. The Mishnah says yes. You could make an argument. It's not fundamentally flawed. It just simply means that you can't exercise a lien from the date until the actual loan. But meanwhile, the Mishnah says it's fundamentally flawed. So now, wonderful. We could say that Rameir is the author of that Mishnah Shvius, and we make a knas. He penalizes the principal because of the interest. Over here, he's penalizing the dates after the actual loan because of the dates before the actual loan. Rav Yochanan Amar, Afilatem Rabbanon, and Rav Yochanan says, no, you don't have to do that. We could distinguish these two debates. Leave the debate regarding a loan of principal and interest out of this discussion. Why? Because over here, I can easily see why even the Chacham would make a gzeira over here. Look, there's a date on this document. Now, a year from now, two years from now, who's going to remember whether the fact that the actual loan document was drawn up a week, a month before the actual loan itself? Who's going to remember that? Quite frankly, probably nobody. And so that means that the Chachamim would say that once it's a predated document, we never wanted to use under any circumstance, because we know that later on people are going to forget that it was predated, allowing the lender to exercise a lien, that it's a fictitious lien. Over here, when it comes to principal and interest, in the document itself, it says, here's the principal, and here's going to be the interest. So even while you're holding the document, even a year from now, even 2 years from now, it's going to be very easy to distinguish the principal and the interest. The big difference. Okay, story of the day. Okay, a lot of moving parts in the story, so I'll try to explain as clearly as I can, but there's a lot going on over here. It's a short story, but a lot of moving parts. How gavra damashkin le pardes lechavre? So there was a person who lent money to his friend and basically was given a piece of property as pledge against the loan. So pledge properties, we've already discussed at length. So that means that during the interim of the loan, so that means that the lender is going to be sitting on the property, enjoying the fruit of that property. How is that not ribis? So we already discussed this earlier in the perek in terms of how to escape the problem of ribis. We talked about reduction of the loan, etc., etc. Not right now a necessary part to understand the story as it presents. So we have a lender, and the loan and the property was given to him as pledge against the loan, and it's a nice property, and let's for our purposes even say that the property, the value of the property exceeded the loan, which again goes back to a discussion that we had earlier. Now, achla tashni. So far now, the loan has been going on now for 3 years. So that means now for 3 years, he's been sitting on the property, enjoying the fruit of that property for 3 years. Now, we're going to learn together in Baba Basra, in the third paragraph of Baba Basra, that when you live on a land for 3 years, unchallenged, so you have what's called the Kenyan Chazaka, right? Which is basically your squatter's right to claim now ownership of the land. So he's been sitting on this land. Now, this land doesn't belong to him. It was simply pledged against the loan, but he's been sitting on it now for 3 years. Now, doesn't make it his. Let's all understand. In other words, it's not his. But here comes now the mess. So Amarle, so now the lender says to the borrower, Imag bin ale mihale metav. So I'm sorry, let me read it correctly. Imizavanas la nihali motav. So the lender says to the borrower, I'm really liking this land. I've been on it for 3 years. The land's been good to me. I want to buy this land from you. And you're going to sell me this land. And if you sell me this land, great. So basically, he's coercing the borrower to sell the piece of property to him. And the lender says to the borrower, and look, if you don't want to sell me the land, then I'm going to play really hardball. And what I'm going to do is as follows. I'm going to lose a loan document, and then I'm going to make a claim that you sold this land to me 3 years ago. Now, you do have title to the property, but I'll tell you this. I've been on this property now for 3 years. I have witnesses attesting that I've been on this property for 3 years. And so, generally speaking, as long as you have that claim going into court, so then the property is in fact yours. So the lender's saying to the borrower, either I'm giving you two options. Either you sell me the land, or your other option is that I'm going to claim ownership of it, lose a loan document, claim ownership of it, and then you're really going to be stuck. Okay. Now,
and the loan document is either buying or selling?
The loan document is by the lender.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So fine. So right. So and right now we're not moralizing, and we're not speaking ethically right now. We're just talking about what will be the outcome of such a deal. So, but it gets messier though. And that is Azokam Akne Levno Katan. So now the borrower, who in fact is the owner of this property, so what he does is as follows. So unbeknownst to the lender, he takes the property and he transacts the property over to his minor son. Okay. Now Vahadar Zavna Niale. And then what he did is he said to the lender, he says, okay, fine, I'm ready to sell you the property. And he then sells the property, but quite frankly, we know that at the time of the sale, the property actually didn't belong to the borrower. He transacted to his son prior to that point in time. So what he's doing now is he's selling something that's not, quite frankly, does not belong to him. Okay. So, under these circumstances, we're going to try to now untangle the following. So now, what the lender has in his hand is that he has a shtar mechira. He has a document of sale, but it's not a true document of sale. It doesn't reflect an actual sale, because prior to the sale, the buyer took the property that belonged to him and sold it to his minor child. So gave it to him. Okay, so it doesn't belong to him. So now the Gemara starts off like this. So now we're untangling. And this part gets a little bit complicated. Zvini v'ad aloha v'zvini. Okay, so the sale's for sure not a sale. We know it wasn't his property. So now, Zuze, kemil v'bishtar dame The government nechas mishubadim. Odilma kemilva apedami ve'ena govem nechas mishubadim. But here now becomes the following question. Look, the lender has a shtar mechira in his hand. He's holding on to it. Now, generally speaking, what does that mean from the perspective of a buyer of property? When you're holding a shtar mechira, one, it confers transfership of property. Two, in the event that the property is taken away from him and he now is going after the seller for reimbursement of the property, that document is going to be proof that he has not yet received reimbursement. Three, in the event that there's a failure of reimbursement, he can now go after the seller's properties, even properties that were already sold. In other words, it creates a lien against the seller's properties. So all this comes about through a shtar mechira. Here, the question on the table is the following. The lender did receive a shtar mechira, but one does not actually, it did not reflect the sale of the property because it wasn't the borrower's to sell at the time. He, underhandedly, although understandably, by the way, and it's not our place right now to make judgment calls. We're just looking at the facts. The facts is that he already transferred the property, ownership of the property, to his child. So this bill of sale that was given now to the lender is not going to transfer the property. That part we got. At the same time, he gave money for the sale. So he's now going to be expecting a reimbursement. That part's true. Can he use this bill of sale in order to create a lien against the seller's properties? So, can you use a bill of sale to create a lien against the seller in the event that there was no actual sale of the property? That's really what we're trying to wrap our heads around.
Does the Megach Talit enable that?
It wasn't a sale.
The Megach Talit, no? He was selling something that really wasn't his, supposedly.
Correct. The Gemara starts off with knowing the sale is not a sale. We know the sale wasn't a sale. And of course he's entitled to reimbursement of his money. That's all a given. The question now is that he's now holding on to a shtar mechira, and can he use this now, does he now have a lien using such a shtar mechira? That's what we're trying to wrap our head around.
This property or other
property? Any property. Meaning that now that he has an entitlement of a reimbursement for the money that he paid, and he's holding a shtar mechira, so he can go after any property. That's our question. So, government mechas meshuvim and government mechas meshubadim. Amar Rabbi Yevalav Hainu de Rav Asi, Damar Rav Asi. So the Gemara says, I think I know the answer based on the following. Mod b'shar shekasvo ein yitzarach lekayimo v'gobim nechas mishubadim. Let's say there's an outstanding document that you have, a loan document. And generally speaking, in order for the loan document to be good, so we got to go to court and we got to certify the document. We have to notarize the document. And Rav Asi has taught us in the second parak of Ksuvos that if the borrower says there's no need to notarize the document, I'm here, I'm telling you the document is a correct document, so then no need to notarize the document, and the document now is exercisable. The lender cannot take the document and exercise it in order to collect his loan, and in the event of a default, can exercise a lien on the loan as well. So far, so good. That's what Rav Asi taught us. So the Gemara says, over here, can we not make the same argument as well? The seller, who in this case is also the borrower, the seller admits that he wrote up the shtar mechira. He's also telling us that there was no sale because I already transferred the property ownership over to my minor son. But he's not denying the fact that he actually wrote the shtar mechira, and then he gave it to the buyer, and the buyer gave him money. And so now he admits that all this happened, so obviously the buyer is entitled to reimbursement, and because the seller admits that he wrote up the shtar mechira, doesn't that now give this document the power where the buyer who's now expecting reimbursement, can't he use this piece of paper to exercise a lien? Just like Rav Asi said regarding a loan document where the borrower admits that There's no question that the document was a true document.
Why wouldn't the lien apply to the land that he turned over to his son?
Wait, just one second. Do me a favor. Let's first stay here, and then afterwards you can ask me permutations. So Amalei Rava mi dami. So Rava says it's really not, it's not a fair comparison. Hasam nitan li kasev, hachalon nitan li kasev. Let's go over a fundamental difference. In the Ravasi scenario, where it's a simple lender, simple borrower, and all the borrower is saying is no need to notarize it because I actually borrowed the money. We're talking about a legitimate document that was written up, and all we're doing is just skipping the process of notarization. But, yeah, the borrower is saying that the note is a fine document, and it was written to it was meant to be written. Over here, you see, at the time of the sale of the property, it didn't belong to the seller. And so therefore, he shouldn't have sold it. Therefore, there shouldn't have been any document written up. There's a big difference between Ravasi's case and our case over here. Gemara continues. Yosef Merema v'kamalash ma'itamalei Ravin l'merema Ela ha'adam Rav Yochanan gzer shama yigva mizman rishon Neiman lo nitan likasev. Well, the Gemara says, let's go back to our predated document. What happened in our predated document? So, we said that the Mishnah told us that that a predated document is no good for fear, for concern, that what's going to happen is that the lender is going to exercise a lien going from the date that's written in the document, and that's fictitious. And that would be illegal for him to do that. Or, let's just use simple language, that would be called stealing by exercising a lien on a document prior to the origination of the loan. And that Rav Yochanan says, and that's why the document's no good. Name alone itali kasev. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning, I understand that the concern, but why didn't Rav Yochanan say something so much more fundamental and so much easier to say? Notably, we shouldn't have written the document to begin with. Meaning, a document that should not have been written is going to be patently delegitimized for the fact that it shouldn't have been written. Much like the seller in our case who sold the property that didn't belong to him. And we said, well, there's no lien against that. That document cannot be used to exercise a lien because the document should never have been written. Why didn't Rav Yochanan say the same thing regarding the predated document? And again, the Gemara says, we'll make a very simple distinction. In the case of a predated document, the document in of itself was not fundamentally flawed. It's just that you wrote the date too early. There was a loan. The document is representing an actual loan that took place. It's just that it was predated. Over here, in the sale of this property, there was no sale whatsoever. The father transacted the property over to his minor son prior to the sale. So the sale never should have happened, period. Any documentation representing that sale is going to be fundamentally flawed and therefore disqualified. Ella, so the Gemara says, okay. This takes us back to the beginning of Bav Metzia. We did this in week two of Bav Metzia, and we also did this back in Gittin as well. Remember, and I just read through it, but I'll explain it. I'll explain it off the daf. Hopefully very succinctly and hopefully very clearly. You steal a property and then you sold the property that you stole. Okay, now, obviously you shouldn't have done that. And obviously now, when the victim takes back his property that properly belongs to him, so now the buyer's going to look at the seller and say, the buyer's going to say to the seller, that's not fair. Not only is it not fair, you owe me. Not only do you owe me, but because you sold me the property, and because now I have a shtar mechira, I'm going to take the shtar mechira and exercise my lien against you and all your property in the reimbursement of that property. The Mishnah tells us that's fine. The only thing, however, that's not encumbered by this by the sale document is going to be shevach and peiros. Any improvements of the land, any fruit that comes off the land, so the buyer can expect reimbursement for that from the seller, but only from unencumbered properties that he has on his possessions, or basically holdings that he currently has, but not from properties that he sold off. And the reason why we discuss this back in Gittin, we discuss this in the beginning of Bamitzia, is because that's not a finite number, and therefore you can't expect buyers to be, you can expect buyers to beware of finite numbers. You cannot expect buyers to beware of numbers where they don't, it's a variable, and you don't know what that number is going to be. So therefore, for Shevach and for Peros, so the buyer can only expect a reimbursement from current holdings that the seller has. Okay. In the meantime, however, let's brush away all the peripheral discussion, and let's really cut to the core of the issue. You had a thief who sold a property. That property didn't belong to him. And meanwhile, we're having a discussion of reimbursement, a lien against that reimbursement. He's a thief. He sold the property. That shtar mechira representing that sale should be patently discharged of, disqualified. Like, what kind of discussion are we even having? So the Gemara says, "Neim lo nitan li kasev." That's the Gemara's question. Cutting right through everything, why should this document have even been written up? And the fact that it was shouldn't have any legal bearing whatsoever. The document shouldn't have been written. He's not the seller of the property. He's a thief. So, like, what are we even talking about? So, Hachiyash, so the Gemara says, once again, we'll make a distinction. In that case over there, Hasam, Ilaman da Amr Nichale, Delo Nikre Gazlana. Ilaman da Amr Nichale Delekem Behem Nusay, Mifaisle Lamara Umekem Leilishtari. So the Gemara back in the beginning of Bamitzias basically said, now the Gemara said in two different ways, and the truth of the matter is that there are subtle differences between the two different ways to say it, but right now for our purposes, I'm going to say it really succinctly. And that is that here's what the thief is going to do. Even though he stole the property, and even though he sold the property, and even though, obviously he shouldn't have done any of that, but what he's going to end up doing afterwards is he's going to go to the original owner, and he's going to pay for the property that he stole. Because he realizes from this point going forward, his reputation is shot. People are going to call him a Goslin. He has no longer any credit rating. So to rehabilitate himself, he's going to go to the victim and he's going to pay for the property that he stole, which ultimately means that when he sold this property, even though at the time of the sale it wasn't his to be sold, but he's going to make good for everybody. He will have paid the original owner for that property. So there, the document of sale, we will expect to be a legitimate document of sale. But hachalav ruchim minei kamechaven shtara mekayimle. But over here, look clearly the entire intent of the seller in our case. Clearly, his whole intention was to avoid the sale of the property. And so if his whole intention is to avoid the sale of the property, we can never look at that document that reflects the transfer of ownership with any legal significance whatsoever. It certainly doesn't represent a sale because it wasn't. And on top of that, then the buyer cannot use the bill of sale and say, okay, I'm going to exercise my lien against the sale. A sale that never happened, a sale where the seller never intended on selling it, and just the opposite. The seller, his entire intent was to avoid the sale to begin with. So therefore, this document will serve no legal function whatsoever, and it cannot be used to exercise any kind of lien. The Gemara says, so in our case over here, we will basically negate the validity of the shtar mechira altogether. Okay, yeah. Let's go. Okay. We are starting the Mishnah. We're on 9 Beis Amud Beis. We're at the Mishnah in the middle of the Amud, a topic of discussion that we've already covered earlier, but we get to cover it again. We've already cited this Mishnah a number of times. We're talking about forward contracting. Forward contracting, I'm going to buy a property. I'm sorry. I'm going to buy goods. I'm going to pay you now. I'll collect the goods later. Obviously, this could lead to ribbis issues, because how do you know how much the goods are going to be worth? And it could very well be that when I'm fronting the money to you now, the goods that I receive will be greater than the value of the money that I gave you, and so therefore I'm a lender lending money. When I get paid back with the goods, the value of the goods may be greater than the loan amount, and we're talking about something akin to lending with interest. Now again, fundamentally, it may not be ribbis midaraisa, because I'm not giving you the money as a loan, I'm giving you the money as a sale. But still, it smacks of ribbis. So under certain circumstances, you could do forward contracting, and under certain circumstances, you cannot. We basically already have learned this before. We're going to now see this in the Mishnah. Ein poskin al peres achi yatzar shahar yatzar shahar poskim v'alfa pishein lazeh yesh lazeh. So, condition number one, referral contracting would be okay, and that is if we have a very clear market price of the item. And the reason why forward contracting would be okay is because once they give them the money, and once we have an established market price, so even if the seller currently doesn't have the goods on him right now, but it's an established market price, and he can go to any supplier and get the goods right now. Haya hu tchilas lekotrim posik imo. Now let's say it's the beginning of the harvest, and we're assuming right now there's no set market price. Another condition which would allow for a contracting, and that would be in a situation in which the seller has the product on hand. Since the seller has the product on hand, we're going to view this, even though the sale has not been finalized yet. Let's all remember, a sale is not finalized over goods until Mashiach. But we are not talking about the finalization of a sale. We're just talking about avoiding the potential ribbis problem. And over here, avoiding ribbis derabanan. So since the seller has the goods on his possession, it's viewed from a ribbis standpoint as if the buyer has already acquired the goods, and therefore there's no problem of ribbis. And the Mishnah is just going to give numerous examples of how you can put an order in, pay up front for goods, even though you don't get the goods until a later point in time. Over wheat, over grapes, ala matan shel zeitzim, over olives, ala beitzim shel yotzer, over clay, va'al hasid mishishaku bekivshan, over the purchase of minerals, specifically lime. So in all these circumstances, you can forward the money, expect payment of the expect receiving the goods at a later point in time, and the reason why it's okay is because the goods were on the hands of the seller at the time. Even though, by the way, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, even though the goods were not totally processed yet, meaning you bought wine, what does the seller have on his possession? Right now he only has grapes. That satisfies the requirement of what we called before, what we're calling right now, yeshlo. Meaning that will be good enough even though it's not fully processed yet. Now, when you're doing a forward contract on manure, so the Mishnah says you could do that at any point during the year. Manure is accessible to everybody at all times. It's the kind of thing where it's always around. Rabbi Yossi Omer and Posken al Zevel Ela Im Kin Aisalo Zevel Be'ashpa. Rabbi Yossi says no. You can only buy manure, forward contracting the purchasing of manure, only when the seller has the manure on hand. The Chachamim Matir and the Chachamim said, no, it's okay, even if he doesn't have it on hand. And the Chachamim sound like they're espousing the same viewpoint as the Tanakama. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to handle that. Uposikim Abishara Gavoa, and in terms of establishing what price you're going to pay, so you, the buyer, are going to establish the price at the best price. Now, obviously, the best price for you, the buyer, is going to be the cheapest price. Now, even though the Mishnah uses the word shar ha-gavoa means the best price vis-a-vis from the perspective of the buyer. Now, Yehuda Omer Alfa Pishla Pasik Ma B'Shar Gavoa Yachalomar Lo Tein Li Kazeh O Tein Li Ma'asai. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says it's implicit in every forward contract that even though you didn't demand the best price, but nevertheless, if when you're collecting the goods, so it's an assumed condition set forth in the forward contracting that you're going to command the best price. Okay. I'm Rav Asi, I'm Rav Yochanan, Poskin al Shar Shebashuk. So the Gemara quotes the name of Rav Yochanan that you cannot forward contract based on a set market value. Now, as we all know, the Mishnah just told us you're allowed to. So the statement of Rav Yochanan is very difficult to understand in light of the fact that the Mishnah says it's okay. We will get to that point in just a moment. I'm Rav Zeru, Rav Asi, I'm Rav Yochanan, Filo Kidormos Hazer. What are you talking about? Are you talking about Dormos? Rashi explains. It was a major market. And there, the prices were pretty much set in stone. So the Gemara says, "Amalei lo amar of Yochanan ela b'shuk shal yaros delo kvit arayu." No, Rav Yochanan was talking about small little markets, wild price fluctuations. There, you cannot do forward contracts. Now, for a moment, we thought that Rav Yochanan was talking about major markets where prices are pretty much set. So the Gemara says, even if that was our Havamina, which we rejected, but even as a Havamina, that went against the Mishnah. Like, how did you even entertain Rav Yochanan's statement, considering that it went against the Mishnah? So how did you then understand the Mishnah, which the Mishnah fully endorses the forward contracting as long as the price is set? So the Gemara says, "Masisim bechita de'achlei, sorry, de'akalbe va'arbe de'meshuch tar'etfei." So the Gemara says, "Look, here's what we could do. We could say that Rav Yochanan, generally speaking, does not allow forward contracting, even in major markets." And again, we ended up rejecting that, but we could have entertained it, and for the following reason: because even in major markets, when the product is first presented to the market, so there, you're still dealing with some fluctuating price. However, there comes a point in time where all the storehouses are opened up, all the ships now are coming to port, and now there is plenty of product in the market. At that point in time, the assumption is that price stabilizes, market price now is pretty much flat, and the Gemara says, "Mashuch taretfei." The market price is going to be set strong and hard for a long time, and at that point in time, even Rav Yochanan will tell you, then it would be okay. The price starts off with the same point that we learned in the Mishnah. You could forward contract goods as long as the market is price is set. Let's say that you're buying wheat. New wheat, fresh wheat. Now, fresh wheat is still very moist. Has a lot of water content. That water content is gone. You don't want it. Meaning it just... It's less valuable. It just means it's more content. So if you want to buy chadashos, you can get with your one zuz, you can buy four sa'al with your one zuz. Yeshanas, however, if you want to buy dry wheat, which is a better commodity, all the liquid now is dried up, and so therefore you are going to, with your zuz, you can only buy three sa'al with your one zuz. So ein poskenachi yetzashar lechadash liyashan. So there, you can't forward contract on the fresh, moist wheat until the price really settles, so that old and new wheat are the same price. Let's say lakutos are people who basically are scavengers. They go around from field to field, they scavenge, and what they're selling is really poor quality. So if you go to the lakutos, you can buy with your one zuz four saw. However, but if you're getting good quality product, you're only going to be able to buy three saw. So once you are buying, and you're not buying good quality, you're buying the inferior quality, you have to wait until the price stabilizes before you could forward contract on these goods. Rav Nachman says that you can forward contract from the reapers for what the going rate is for their inferior quality. And the reason why must be because even though this particular reaper who sells inferior product doesn't have, but he can go to another scavenger. So the Gemara says, Balabai is not Miyazav Milakut. So can we say the same thing by a Balabai who normally sells better quality goods? Amalei Balabai Zila Bei Milsa Lemezav Milikut. So the Gemara says, first of all, no, we don't assume that. The Balabai is not going to go and buy his product from the scavengers. It's inferior product. It's Zila Bei Milsa. It's beneath him. Ibai Zema Mandiay Zuzila Balabai Aper Shapir Yahid. Or the Gemara says, another simple explanation is because when you're not going to a scavenger and you're buying from when you're buying a name brand from a person with a good reputation, you will assume that you're going to be getting only good product and not the product that belongs to the scavengers. Amar Sheshet Amar Ravuna in Love and Isle Shar Shebashok. You can't borrow money with the promise that you're going to pay back with product. Now, even though forward contracting would be okay, as long as the market value is set, lending is not okay. So, Amalei Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Rav Sheshet, Amalei Rav Yosef Bar Abba, Rav Sheshet, Tumi Amar Rav Huna, Hachivah Abai Minei Rav Huna, Hani Bnei Rav Diasvei B'Tishrei Apar B'Teves. The yeshiva students who borrow money in the month of Tishrei and pay back with product in the month of Teves, Shari or Asir, yes or no? So Amar Lahu Achita Behini Vachita Bishile by Zevuni Uparele Mikara. I'm sorry, Uparele. And his answer is, you can buy it here, you can buy it there. Shili and Hini are two very popular markets. So basically, when you're lending him the money, so if he doesn't have the product right now, it's easily accessible. So the Gemara says, okay, and what basically happened is he changed his mind. Just like you can forward contract on the sale of goods as long as the market is set, you can also lend money on goods as long as the market is set. Tanur Rabbanan Amol Chavila Mimakom Lamakom Matzah Chaver V'Amal Tenali V'Ani Alach Kederach Shemalan Lacha V'Oso Makom. So let's say that right here the current market price in this area is low, but if we go somewhere else we can fetch a higher price. And let's say somebody comes over to me and says to me, okay, I'll be your schlepper. I will schlep the goods over there, and I will sell at the higher price over there. So, birishus mocher moter birishus lokeach aser. We're now on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, and it's very simple. If while the product is being sent over there, so the owner of the product still retains ownership, and he is to me just merely a shliach, so then we're good. If, however, I sell him the product over here, which means that he's forwarding the money now, then he's going to go over there and he's going to sell it at a higher price and he's going to come back and give me now more money. So then it smacks of ribbis and then it would not be okay. Similarly, says the Gemara, if you're transferring fruit from one place to another and the person says, give them to me, I will go ahead and sell the peros over there. So if he, the buyer, already has peros, so then it would be okay. Otherwise, it would not be okay. Once again, it would smack of ribbis. And finally, when you are chamarim, you are literally donkey drivers. And what you're going to do is that you're going to be allowing prepayment on product for a lower price. That would be okay. Ve'enim choshishim. So that would be fine. My time, huh? Now, why should that be okay? What are we talking about? A reduction of price because of prepayment. So once again, it smacks a ribbis. I'm giving you less money for product, basically for the advantage of getting my money early. I'm going to get back at a later point in time product valued at more than the money I gave you. Smacks a ribbis. Why should that be okay? Gemara is going to give two explanations. My time, Rapapa Amar Nichale de Megluli Tara. So he says, because look, what's going to end up happening is that these donkey drivers are going to be receiving prepayment. So because they now have money, when they go to the suppliers, the gates are going to open for them. They're going to get privileges and advantages simply because they have money in their hands. So therefore, even though, yes, it's true, they are discounting prepayment, but because they're getting privileges, so therefore it does not smack a ribbis, they are getting value for that money. Rav Achabre, the Rav Ika Amar Nichalu de Mezle Gabayhu, or the Gemara gives another explanation, similar, and that is that they are going to get value, extra value, because they have money, because they were advanced money. And that is, when they go to the suppliers, they're going to say to the suppliers, look, we got paid in advance, but we had to sell at a discount. we're expecting you also to lower your prices for us, and we have the money right here. So basically, it's either they're going to get certain advantages for getting the prepayment, or they're going to be able to negotiate better prices because they got prepayment. In either event, so therefore there are tangible financial advantages for the chamarim, and therefore it's not ribbis. And the Gemara points out, there's a subtle difference between these two explanations given. What if there are people who, when they go to the suppliers don't recognize them? So, are they going to get their advantages? Rashi says, it's funny. Rashi says, yes. They're still going to get, I'm just saying it like Rashi. Rashi says yes. They're going to get their advantages because they're coming in with money in hand. Are they going to be able to drive the price down? Again, I know you could argue this point, but Rashi says no. Suppliers are only going to give discounts to people they know, not to people they don't know.